Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
Well, thank you for joining me once again for another live edition of the Daily Wrap-Up. This morning, I don't know if anybody was watching the channel. We were trying to do a few little live stream experiments and trying to do a little research as well as trying to just, you know, kind of test the new software. And we had some interesting problems this morning with connectivity, which ended up just completely cutting down the stream, which was not incredibly important because it was just simply a test as well as just trying to do some kind of research streams that I might be doing more in the future. But it brought to an interesting point up, which it turns out I already had somebody coming out to check out the connectivity. And it turns out, interestingly, and I'll let you take this for what you will, per the words of the cable guy himself, the cable, as he went to research, it looked like it had been hit or cut, were his own words, which I'm not trying to suggest anything. That's exactly what he said. So take that for what you will. I found that to be very, very interesting. Of course, it could have just been a random accident, or maybe it was like that to begin with, but I've been broadcasting here for a while now. Just seemed very interesting that it was, you know, he said it was hit or cut. Very interesting. But in light of the upcoming holiday, it just kind of brings to light or brings to mind some interesting discussion points just in general today, not necessarily connected, but just in general. It's very clear that truth and free speech are actively being suppressed, and not necessarily all in very obvious ways either. It's very clearly being suppressed in obvious ways also, such as YouTube and Facebook and Twitter and these places openly talking about shutting down conversations they don't agree with or that they deem fake news, which in and of itself is a violation of free speech. I mean, obviously, they're private companies. They don't have an obligation to uphold those rights. However, they are large enough today where you could argue that they have that obligation because they're a monopoly. But that being said, those are the obvious overt ways that we're talking about, that they are very clearly stifling that kind of information. But in addition to that, there are very not so obvious ways that they're shutting this down. I mean, clearly, we have this medium to talk on, at least for now, as well as many others. But that doesn't mean that they're not suppressing the information and stifling it and making sure it doesn't reach certain people and shutting down all kinds of different ways. So we feel like we have this measure of freedom, but it's not actually there. And we have to understand that all of this is happening under the guise of morality and protection from all kinds of phantom threats that many actually seem not to exist. But obviously, it brings to light a very famous quote that's used quite a bit, but seems very relevant with the holiday coming up tomorrow, which, of course, Benjamin Franklin said, "Those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety." And that's, and regardless of what your opinions on the man, that has never been more true than today. And we have to understand that that's exactly what's happening, is that they're creating these problems so we react to them and then presenting us with the solution of safety in the guise of cracking down on our rights to ensure that we're safe from problems that they created to begin with. So we are very clearly being shut down in many, many ways. And if those in power had any actual interest in a free society, we would be seeing quite a different situation today. So it's something we have to keep in mind, especially tomorrow when everyone's going to be out celebrating the concept of Independence Day and freedom, when it's something that is not exactly as it's being presented to us. And we have to keep that in mind. Really, the ability to speak truth and share it with everybody like we're doing right now is more important than ever, especially with how controlled everything is today and how easy it's becoming due to that government control and their influence to keep very relevant information from really seeing the light of day in at all. And for our very first story of the day coming from Medium.com, that time Hillary Clinton removed John Bolton's favorite terror cult from the terror list. Now, if this is a story in general that is... Oops, let me get that on there real quick. Sorry, I'm still testing this. There we go. Now, this is a story in general that is important, especially with what's going on today in Iran and all the different information flying around and how, in general, people are being wildly misled about what's actually going on there and how the information around it's being bent and contorted, as always, to support very specific two-party division narratives. And this one in particular is no different. And obviously the title kind of explains exactly what this is about. It's a very interesting concept. Now in 2012, despite its having actually, this the MEK, despite actually having killed Americans, by the way, this group that's being supported in acts of terrorism along with thousands of Kurds and Iranians, this bloodthirsty MEK group were removed from the terror list, which it was once on, by then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, following the recommendation of stalwart deep state lackeys like ex-CIA Director James Woolsey and Porter J. Goss, former FBI Director Louis J. Free, former Democratic presidential candidate Howard Dean, Obama National Security Advisor James L. Jones, and George W. Bush's Homeland Security Secretary Tom Ridge, as well as current Trump administration employees like John Bolton and Rudolph Giuliani, who are important points that we're going to touch on today. And to begin today, at 1 year ago, John Bolton, which I've actually touched on before, the current National Security Advisor of Donald Trump's administration, appeared at an MEK rally, the very group we're discussing, and said this specifically.
There is a viable opposition to the rule of the Ayatollahs, and that opposition is centered in this room today. I have said for over 10 years since coming to these events that the declared policy of the United States of America should be the overthrow of the mullah's regime in Tehran. The behavior and the objectives of the regime are not going to change, and therefore the only solution is to change the regime itself. And that's why before 2019, we here will celebrate in Tehran. Thank you very much.
And I want to tell you, the changes in Washington are very exciting. You saw on this stage, standing here, of course in Paris, but this reminds me of Paris, you saw John Bolton. You remember John Bolton. He's going to be President Trump's national security advisor. You think he changed his mind? No, in fact, if anything, John Bolton has become more determined that there needs to be regime change in Iran, that the nuclear agreement needs to be burned, and that you need to be in charge of that country with democratic allies and even democratic opponents. That's what we want. That's democracy. There's a Republican and a Democratic Party in America. There's several parties in Albania. They don't all agree with each other. That's what democracy is about. That's what you want. You'll rule. Others will rule over a period of time. And that's what makes a great country. And that allows your children to have the freedom that you haven't had. And I have so much respect for you because your sacrifice is making all this possible. And the right policy for Iran, for every good, decent government in the world, is regime change. Regime change. Regime change, absolutely. Let him hear it. Let him hear it in Tehran. You know they're nervous, you know they're frightened. Bullies are always frightened when someone stands up to them, and you've stood up to them. So I look forward to coming back here. I look forward to our meetings in Paris and in Washington, and anywhere that you need me, I'm there. But I'm going to conclude with telling you there's one place I want to go. There's only one place that will make me happier than being here in Toronto with you. And you know where that is. Tehran! Thank you.
Now, I'm noticing in the chat, it seems that there was an audio issue. I'm not sure where exactly it cut out. What I was essentially saying after the last video, I hope you actually were able to see the last video, was essentially that the group that John Bolton was speaking to was the MEK. That's an MEK rally, which, like we said, was on a terrorist watch list and was taken off by Hillary Clinton. The point being that he was openly calling for regime change, which is something that verifiably has been the plan for a very long time. However, it's not something that they will openly say other than people like John Bolton and Rudy Giuliani, as if they're speaking with the president's mouth, which is kind of unnerving. I'll just kind of repeat what I said before in case you missed it. The point was essentially that, which is the reason I showed this last video with Rudy Giuliani, was the fact that the sentiments were echoed almost exactly, which is very interesting. We know that there's similarities there and plans together, but it just shows you that there's a lot of planning that goes into this. Rudy Giuliani recently said at another event in Paris, just recently, another MEK event, says, quote, "The mullahs must go. The Ayatollah must go. And they must be replaced by a democratic government," which is already what it is. I mean, right now, currently, Iran is a democratically elected government. That's a fact. In a lot of ways, much more legitimate than what we have going on in this country. Also verifiable by many different studies. And he says, which Madam Rajavi represents. And he's referring to the MEK leader, Maryam Rajavi. He said, quote, "Freedom is right around the corner. Next year, I want to have this convention in Tehran." Almost exactly kind of what he said, John Bolton said. Just very, very interesting. We have to begin to see how openly this is being carried out. And I said in the beginning, these are exactly the kind of, you know, information that is being kept from the larger discussion. And why this is, you know, Caitlin makes the point in the article when discussing the QAnon crowd that she can't get, you know, what they continue to talk about the fact that this regime change in Iran is kind of the plan. And it's all some, you know, secret concept that's leading towards some 4D chess move that's going to, you know, make these very clear deep state long-term neocon plans veer towards some idea of freedom for the Iranian people and the United States. I can't even wrap my mind around how that's possible. But then she goes on to point out that this QAnon group, the anonymous 8chan poster, never seems to release information on things that are damaging to the Trump administration or Trump himself. Now, given they always in their mind think, oh, well, he's just this altruistic Superman that's going to save America. So, of course, there's nothing bad that he could possibly say. But it's clearly not true. And we see all the things were going on today, and many of which we're going to talk about today. But this in particular, I find very, very interesting. Now, there's also a point that I want to reference here from a tweet from Lee Camp that I saw today, which I found very interesting, which was essentially, I'm still messing these things up. it was a tweet from Lee Camp that said essentially a 2009 Brookings manual states, inciting regime change in Iran would require inspiring an insurgency. Then it literally suggests that the CIA train MEK in its proxy. Flash forward to 2018, we're openly collaborating with the MEK, promising regime change. U.S. imperialism is shameless, which is it's pretty funny to see that's, you know, this is a 2009 Brookings Institute manual that literally says exactly that. And we're literally seeing exactly that play out. I mean, how much more obvious can it get? But people don't want to see what contradicts their beliefs. I mean, we all do it to some degree. I touched on this a little bit this morning. I mean, it's confirmation bias. We all, to some degree, seek out the information that supports what we already want to know. But anyone who has a genuine interest in finding the truth will try to find things that counter what they believe and try to understand where they're coming from and see if it makes any rational sense. And then kind of bring it all together and come to a conclusion based on all the information, not just what supports what you already want to believe. The simple fact that we can discuss things like this, rather the United States can discuss things like this and see it play out exactly like they're talking about and still try to pretend like the protests are organic and they have to go in to save the people, which, I mean, even that in itself contradicts exactly what they're saying as far as Rudy Giuliani and John Bolton, which is pretty frustrating to see. Now, it actually goes on to say Giuliani in this article discussing the protests in Iran, which is like I was just pointing out, he literally said, quote, "Those protests are not happening spontaneously," which right there contradicts exactly what the government is trying to push. "They are happening because of many of our people in Albania and many of our people here and throughout the world." Albania, she points out, is where there's a training camp for the MEK. It's just, it's ridiculous to see that this is, the narratives are so obviously contradicting, but the mainstream narrative from the U.S. government is still that this is an organic uprising and that we have to go in and take military action to save the people of Iran, which we're not necessarily there yet, but that's where it's going. And we've seen it played out so many times in the past. So please, all of you out there, do not fall for it yet again, as that we can see another country begin to be decimated by U.S. imperialism and left in ruin under the guise of trying to help those people, which is just absurd. Moving on to the next story, coming from ZeroHedge.com, Iran accuses U.S. of docking chemical weapons-laden ship in the Persian Gulf. Another very interesting story that I find to be incredibly revealing with what's going on today, and something that it's just, there's a lot of speculation involved. So I'm going to go ahead and put that out right in the beginning. This is coming from the direct word of the Iranian government, the people involved there. So we, you know, of course, this could all be made up like anything could. I wouldn't put it past any government today to make up lies to suit their own narrative. That's, you know, it's not like United States is the evil government, all the rest are the best, or vice versa. It's all somewhere in between. All these governments lie. That's why we always have to be very, you know, use critical thinking and consider all the information involved. But in this case specifically, with all the facts we know from the past and everything happening going towards the future, and especially all of the warnings we've had of potential false flags in Syria, this definitely seems to ring a bit true. Now, in this specifically, multiple Russian and Middle East news sources are now reporting the accusations made by the Iranian military that essentially a U.S. ship carrying chemical weapons has recently anchored in the Persian Gulf and engaged in they claim a dangerous plot, though not really naming the particular Gulf state territorial waters at which the ship actually docked. The accusation comes just as major 7-week U.S. military exercise, Operation Nautical Horizon, which I always find these to be very interesting, these major military exercises, which just very overt shows of dominance ultimately. Now, that has concluded in the Persian Gulf, which involved the same military transport ship that decommissioned Syria's declared chemical weapons stockpiles. Very interesting. I mean, the article goes to make the point that, you know, it's not like these weapons are have been held on the ship, which is essentially what they're claiming, but it's highly possible. I mean, it would make perfect sense if they go on to claim that the weapons had been disposed of, but instead they were stored on this ship and used, as we've seen already. We've already seen and seen verified information from multiple sources about the fact that the U.S. government had helped get basically chemical weapons in the hands of extremists in Syria. I mean, I'll make sure to include some in the show notes. This is not a new thing. This is not new information. We've seen this all over. I mean, we have proof that the United States used chemical weapons in Iraq. We have proof that they've given banned munitions and chemical weapons to Saudi Arabia to use in Yemen. This is all fact. But so this is the claim is that they're now docking this ship there with chemical weapons, the very same ship that was decommissioned, supposedly decommissioned Syria's declared chemical weapons stockpiles. Very interesting. Iran's press TV reported that its senior Iranian military spokesman said the U.S. Navy's MV Cape Ray vessel had docked at the coast of one of the Persian Gulf Arab countries after recently being escorted into the region by an American warship, and implied further that chemicals carried by the ship could be transferred to U.S.-backed groups in Syria. So a very interesting story. There's a lot of speculation, but with all that we know that's been going on and all the warnings for Syria, this seems pretty damning. And it's something that I wouldn't put past to, you know, how the way that this would all work out. So obviously Iran has an incentive to put this out there, especially even if it's not true, but they also have a pretty big incentive to point this out if it is true, because they're included in all of this. They're clearly on the axis of evil as they're being framed, at the side of all of the countries they're trying to fight against. So very interesting how this should play out. So I think in general, we should make a mental note of this. And if and when we see this kind of upcoming event that we've already been, you know, shown pretty damn clear proof that it's been at least being prepared for near the Al Jafra oil fields in Syria, if we see it take place, this could very well be a connection that we should keep in our minds. Moving on to the next story, coming from mintpressnews.com, ongoing bombardment of Hodeidah belies UAE claim of ceasefire. Another interesting story that's important and really shows you the lies going on today and how much they're willing to manipulate the story just to get the press and just the average mainstream viewer away from considering negative things happening, especially in regard to Yemen, which I find very frustrating to see that this kind of story, even this story gets zero attention in the media, but the ceasefire discussion, of course, gets covered, but any of the other negative press about what's actually going on in Yemen, especially in Hodeidah, as tens of millions of people are projected to die by the end of the year due to the blockade in Hodeidah, as well as the air raids and the cholera outbreak and the famine and all of this stuff that's being caused by the actions of the U.S.-backed Saudi coalition, none of that makes the media. So we have to ask ourselves why that's always the case. Obviously, we know the answer to that. There's a very clear reason the media is controlled and the reason that they will not discuss things like this. But it's interesting to see how this is playing out. Now, essentially, this story is discussing the fact that the United Arab Emirates Minister of Foreign Affairs had announced on Sunday a pause in the U.S.-backed Saudi-led attacks against Yemen's port of Hodeidah. He claimed the halt was intended to allow United Nations efforts to resolve the conflict to take place. Now, my point being is that this is what they put out. Clearly a lie. They put this information out in hopes that people will think, oh, good, so they're finally trying to find some resolution here. They're trying to bring in the United Nations. However, despite that announcement, the Saudi-led coalition is, in fact, currently escalating its attacks on various regions in the Hodeidah governorate. Warplanes launched more than 70 airstrikes in the south of Hodeidah on Saturday, and on Monday, the Hodeidah International Airport was targeted by two airstrikes, and a separate Saudi airstrike targeted a mosque. Obviously, they target the airports to keep from having humanitarian aid coming in, which is the obvious effort. It's very malicious. They're trying to hurt these people, which it's nothing new. I mean, that's what happens in wartime in general. Not, of course, it's not okay. It's absolutely horrific, but this is nothing new. This is what exactly happens. We've seen the U.S. take the very same actions in wartime with other countries, but now we're seeing this specifically. But the lie is what I want people to focus on. This lie about, oh, well, we're trying to bring the UN in to solve this problem while they continue to actually increase the very thing they're claiming to want to de-escalate, which it's despicable. It's clearly trying to give them cover for the very same thing they're trying to cover out. Now, perfectly leading into the next story, the very same thing, which is just even more horrific and relates to a video that I recently had censored. Saudi's trashed UN report on child casualties in Yemen before its release. This is one that I think is very, very important. You will all remember I had a video which, interestingly enough, actually kind of created my live streaming. I mean, in the past, I'd never really live streamed. I actually enjoy it. I'm beginning to enjoy it even more, but in the past I've recorded, and I'm actually probably going to continue to do those as well, but I had recorded and edited and put them up. I had a video that I put up and was immediately taken down because they claimed it was misleading. And it was exactly about this topic. The title was U.S. Coalition was responsible for basically 370 child deaths in Yemen, which is a fact, which, again, this is what the UN report is referring to. And this specific article, they're essentially trashing that or really trying to cover up what's actually going on there, which is pretty despicable. Now, in the lead up to the release of the UN report I'm discussing, which focused on mass child casualties in the Yemen conflict, the Saudi-led coalition that has largely been blamed for these deaths is already contesting the results of the report, some of which were leaked to the press late last month, which is what I had reported on. According to media reports, the UN was able to confirm the deaths of 552 children last year in Yemen. Think about that. Horrific. As we march through the streets about mistreated children in the United States, 67% of those children, 370 in total, were found to have been killed by coalition airstrikes. So let's see if I get censored again for telling the truth. This is exactly what I reported on last time and was censored for discussing it. This is the US backed Saudi coalition. I think they took issue with me saying US coalition, which is arguably the same thing, especially when you discuss how much of an increased role the US actually has in what's going on in Yemen. The report also found that 83 Yemeni children were killed by attacks launched by the Houthi rebels and 41 killed by fighters loyal to the Saudi-backed government, while the remainder were killed by the coalition's international allies, the United States among them, as well as terror groups active in Yemen, such as Al-Qaeda and the Arabian Peninsula. Now, this is interesting because Al-Qaeda also has very clear ties to Western powers, and very interesting point to include there. They blamed Yemeni resistance, however, specifically the Houthis, for the deaths of children in Yemen, stating that many of the children who had been killed in the Saudi-led coalition had been recruited as fighters by the Houthis and had been present at military targets as a result. Now, this is the same exact kind of concept we're hearing discussed in Israel, claiming that, oh, well, they're pushing people forward. Hamas is pushing children forward, which I've never argued is not entirely impossible. I mean, I'm sure something like that happens. But with all the evidence that we've seen, all of the journalists being killed, all of the medical people being killed, it's very clear that that's not all that's going on, just like we're seeing here with all these children being killed. And you can even make the argument that so they're basically saying because they put children there, it's their fault. We're knowingly bombing children because they're working with them and it's their fault. It's absurd that this is what they're claiming. And this is the very people that are being backed by the United States government. Think about that, being funded with our tax dollars. Last year, the UN similarly accused the coalition of violating the rights of children and of being responsible for more than 687 children injuries and deaths in Yemen over the course of 2016. 687 child injuries. Think about that. At the same time, Saudi Arabia called the UN's conclusions misleading, but offered no evidence to back up the claim. Of course, exactly like we're seeing today. They claim it's misleading, misrepresenting the truth, because, you know, but the point is, it's the report shows very clearly these children died. So it's semantics at this point about whether, you know, it's because of their efforts in pushing them forward. It doesn't change the fact that their efforts are killing these children. And I would argue that their claims are wrong to begin with. Despite Saudi claims to the contrary, the well-documented evidence that the coalition has repeatedly bombed civilian targets, such as hospitals, schools, clinics, markets, and critical infrastructure, substantially weakens Saudi Arabia's past and present assertions that it is responsible for child casualties, resulting only from the coalition's targeting of Houthi military targets. Which is just absurd. There's so much proof to verify exactly the opposite of what they're claiming. We just recently talked about a new cholera clinic from the Doctors Without Borders that got bombed by U.S.-picked targets. I mean, there's no way to misunderstand if you actually look at the information. This is pure propaganda to cover up what they're doing. Very malicious, sinister actions to basically invade and take over the Yemen territory under the guise they're trying to push out Iranian militias. That's ultimately what they're claiming. And even if that was the real case, they're still committing human rights violations and war crimes. Doesn't change that fact. This does not include child deaths due to the verifiable U.S.-Saudi caused cholera outbreak and ever-increasing famine due to their blockades and basically just, I can't think of a better word than malicious. I mean, what they're doing is intentionally creating harmful situations to hurt the civilian population. Just like we see with other places like Syria and Iran, they're creating this unrest so the people lash out at the government instead of, you know, really addressing the cause of it, which is the, you know, the Western actions. But in this specific case, we're seeing them with the blockades and creating the famine, not allowing humanitarian aid in, literally going to kill, they claim, the UN claims, upwards of 10 million people by the end of the year. Just think about that. How is this not the biggest story? They claim this is going to be the biggest genocide in history. I mean, I just can't understand why this isn't getting more attention. It's something that we have to continue to put out there, and we have to put blame where it should go, which is predominantly with Saudi Arabia and the UAE, but as well as the United States, who directly backs their actions, knowingly funding and helping and picking targets as they kill children and bomb hospitals and clinics to hurt these people. There's really no other way to see it. We have to begin to discuss this much more than we currently are. Moving on to the next story and the final story of the day, coming from the anti-media, Senator Lindsey Graham makes a surprise visit to Syria, calls for U.S. military to stay. Another one that I think is just ridiculous, and it just shows you the true nature of these people and what they're trying to accomplish. This story in general just shows you the war-focused mentality of, you know, Congress in general, politics, the U.S. government. I mean, it's all really about continuing the war efforts despite all the things we've seen, all the people actually being hurt and the actual de-escalation that could be possible. And, you know, really even discussing de-escalation is ridiculous because all of this is caused by the very actions of the people leading this forward. And it's like, so even if they de-escalate it now, it doesn't change what they've caused to begin with. And it's a very disgusting situation. Hawkish Senator Lindsey Graham made a surprise visit to Syria on Monday, stopping off in the city of Manbij, which is held by U.S. and Turkish forces. Big surprise. Graham delivered a speech clearly designed to attack the idea of a U.S. pullout from Syria. It's just, I mean, I can't even wrap my mind around why they claim that kind of like they always use Iraq as some kind of a model saying, oh, well, we shouldn't have pulled out like we did because it destabilized the country. And there is some legitimacy to that claim. But it was clearly set up that way. And what we're seeing here is right now, it's very, very different. The Syrian government is clearly taking back their territory and doing a pretty damn good job of it. If you check out Syriana analysis, he's keeping up on it pretty well. They're very clearly taking back their territory. And that's why I think we're seeing increased efforts to possibly see a false flag come up, which I think we're going to soon. But to pull out of Syria right now is the absolute right move. It's regardless of how terrible it's going to make the U.S. look. Clearly, they failed in their efforts, which is a good thing because they've been trying to overthrow the Assad government from the very beginning. But him claiming that to pull out right now is a bad thing is always under this guise that it's going to hurt the people there. And the fact is that most people there on the ground from many different sources really support the Assad government. Very, very clear. They're under the... And Eva Bartlett, of course, has done excellent research on this and shown the actual rebel-held areas under the extremist groups they put in there, as with, you know, an arm and fund. They're basically the very extremist groups they pretend to fight elsewhere are horrific to these people. And this is what causes all the problems. In the moment that they're forced out by the Assad government, they all rush back into the government-controlled areas. It's happened more than once. Now, there's no official plan for the U.S. to withdraw from Syria. Indeed, Pentagon officials have been presenting the U.S. military's presence in Syria as essentially open-ended and never-ending, really. That's continued to be the case, despite the fact that President Trump has openly continued to talk about, like, wanting to withdraw the U.S. troops from Syria, sometimes saying he expects to happen soon, which is interesting. We saw that happen just before the last supposed chemical attack, which has been just roundly disproven. And of course, we're going to pull out of Syria, and then, oh, wait, we have to go back in because there was an attack, which wasn't true. See, that's what always seems to happen. Now, ultimately, we're seeing this talked about by a lot of different people. Now, Graham, essentially, in my opinion, is getting out in front of this for the possible considerations of a drawdown in Syria, as I said before, because he very much wants to continue the war state. These people all benefit from it, and not only that, they have extreme elite corporate backers who do not want to see a de-escalation. They lose money in many different ways. And it says in his comments, Graham insisted that the U.S. needed to stay here to help and that it would be terrible if the U.S. didn't have any troops in Syria in the future. I mean, how can you rationally justify a claim like that? That it would be terrible if the U.S. didn't have any troops in Syria? I mean, that's just disconnected from reality. We have to begin to see here from all aspects, war, at all costs. They're trying to sabotage what's happening with North Korea. They're trying to kick off another war in Iran. They're trying to keep this going in every possible way, whether it's for profit or simply just, I'm fumbling my words, but just ultimate dominance in the world. Hegemony is what I was trying to say. But what's interesting here is that it's something that we've seen just without end for a very, very long time. And now we're starting to see the collapse of that. We're starting to see the dominance of the U.S. government around the world continue to lessen. And clearly, like I've said before, like a cornered animal, they are lashing out and trying to take extreme actions to maintain that power. Clearly, the military power is not what I'm talking about. They spend more than the rest of the world combined on our military. Clearly, that's why they're able to maintain this. But we have to recognize that their influence is clearly waning. And they're going to try to maintain the war effort around the world at all costs. And all the stuff we talked about today, we have to go back to the beginning and recognize that simply talking about these things with a rational, open mind is shut down today in every possible way. The videos are suppressed. They're censored. And just in the mediums in general won't allow this kind of discussion. Things like this on Twitter will get you banned. The point is that they are stopping this kind of discussion outside of the two-party paradigm. And there's a reason for that. We have to begin to recognize how this pretend free society is really not as free as we think it is. We're in this kind of Orwellian next generation freedom where we think we're in this free society, but really we're inside of a cage and we don't even realize it. It's like a virtual prison. And it doesn't mean that we don't have some measure of freedom, But just because we can sit here and talk doesn't mean that this discussion is going to reach all the people that normally would if they weren't shutting it down. So it's always important for you guys to help get this spread, discuss the points, go out and make your own videos. Make sure this information gets out there as often as possible. Go talk to people on the streets. Obviously, as I said before, it's hard to do that today. Be very, you know, patient with people and don't be aggressive. Obviously, then when you try to speak truth to someone and they get all red-faced and angry and start yelling, you just walk away. I mean, that shows you that you're hitting their cognitive dissonance there and they don't want to hear it. But you plant the seed, you walk away. And we have to keep doing this. It's more important than ever, especially with the holiday tomorrow, when everyone's going to be out with their jingoistic, you know, overzealous patriotism, screaming about freedom. We have to point out the reality of the situation. And that's not un-American. That's quintessentially American, to come out and speak truth when it's in the most inopportune times. Now, I'm definitely probably going to do a quick little video tomorrow, but it is probably going to get less attention because everyone's out doing their thing. But I will have something to say tomorrow about the general holiday. And as always, I truly appreciate you all being here, and I value, you know, your interaction. I value your support of The Last American Vagabond. Of course, I really didn't pay attention to the chat this time, as I always say, but, you know, your super chats and everything else help, you know, always help immensely. And I appreciate all of your support. As always, make sure you check us out on Patreon, you know, Last American Vagabond Patreon channel. It's where I post all of these shows and everything else. And even a dollar a day makes all the difference in the world. And as I always say, simply just sharing the video, if that's not possible for you, is just as important to me. So the support really comes down to interaction and getting the information out there. I love all of you. I support all of you as well. Be sure and share your information with me. Shoot me an email. It's all about interaction today. And as always, all the information we discussed will be in the show notes below. And also make sure you check out thelastamericanvagabond.com. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.